Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, what it's like to live in America with a criminal record. I want to hear your or your family's experience with this. But first, 'tis the season of presidential campaign announcements, and we have a new segment called What Does That Democrat Bring to the Party? We'll leave the horse race stuff to the pollsters and the cable news pundits. We're interested in what each Democratic entrant's biography, their skills, their character, their legislative work reveals about the kind of president they would make. And our goal is to get that perspective from a lot of people outside of Washington, D.C. So as Elizabeth Warren plans more trips to Iowa, she was there this past weekend, we're turning to Diane Bystrom. She's director emerita of the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State. And she joins us today from Nebraska. And Diane, it's good to talk to you again. Thanks for being available to us.
It's nice to talk to you again, Carrie, as well.
When I ask, what does that Democrat bring to the party? I mean party in the sense of the Democratic Party, of course, but I'm also thinking about party in the sense of a raucous, crowded primary caucus party. Iowans are getting an early look at Elizabeth Warren. So what kinds of things do Iowans want to know at this stage of the presidential gauntlet? What are they looking for?
Well, I think like any time, and I lived in Iowa for 22 years, and I think what they look for in the caucus system early on is they usually always look for someone who can beat the other candidate. So if it's an incumbent president, of course, it's a little bit different, but in a year like this where there'll be a challenger, they're always looking for someone who can they can launch. You know, Iowa plays that role in launching sometimes not the top choice of Iowa, but at least in the top three choices onto that national stage. And so one thing I learned in Iowa from my years there is that Iowans really take their role in this process very seriously, and they very much think that it's their role, they have the role to vet these candidates and to turn out for these kinds of events like Elizabeth Warren had this past weekend in Iowa.
So as they're watching, listening to her speak, watching, you know, the authority that she brings to some of these appearances, they're thinking electability. What else?
Yeah, I think they're thinking that, and they're thinking, I think they are concerned about the issues. And I think in her case, you know, the fact that she's had both as kind of lived the life and also talked the talk about consumer protection, you know, Wall Street, things like that. She's kind of weaved her own personal experiences growing up in Oklahoma into that and her career in consumer protection and bankruptcy into sort of this message that I think transcends, I think, all the issues that she talks about. You know, the other thing I would say is that in Iowa, they're actually in the Democratic Party. There's a very strong progressive slash populist wing of the party. Mm-hmm. As you'll recall, Bernie Sanders did really well in the state in the 2016 caucuses, and Hillary Clinton barely won that
right.
caucus at the very end. And so, and the support for Bernie Sanders after the caucus even continued well into the Democratic National Convention. And so there is, I think, a very strong, progressive, populist vein of the Democratic Party in Iowa. So I'm not surprised at the turnout that she got, you know, last week when she visited the state.
You mentioned that she's emphasized her childhood growing up in Oklahoma City and the fact that her parents were blue-collar. I think she has called her upbringing living kind of on the ragged edge of middle class. Now, as you know, Diane, a lot of candidates go out of their way to emphasize humble beginnings. You know, let's examine why that is. I mean, what is it about ending up, as Elizabeth Warren did, as a law professor at Harvard for 20 years, but the thing she really wants to talk about when she's out in the middle of the country is, I grew up in Oklahoma City and my dad was a janitor. Why?
Well, I think that that's just sort of part of the American, I don't know if it's tradition or mystique, is that, you know, we have a tradition in this country where that we really value, I think, people who come from humble beginnings but were able to sort of pull themselves up by the so-called bootstraps. And so I think we have a tradition in this country that we honor that. In fact, interestingly enough, before I came on the show, I was talking to my neighbor. I'm at her house and telling her about, we were talking about our humble beginnings. And so I think it's I think it's something that resonates with the American public, that you come from a humble beginning, but through hard work, you bring yourself up to a position, whatever profession that you're in. And so I think that is sort of the American tradition, and we value that as Americans.
You know, as I was digging deeper into her bio, I didn't know that her undergrad, Elizabeth Warren's undergrad degree, was in speech pathology, I think from the University of Houston.
Yes, it was.
She never talks about that.
At George Washington University, she was a top debater in the state of Oklahoma and earned a scholarship to George Washington, but then got married and moved with her husband to Houston, and she finished up then in speech audiology at, I think it was the University of Houston.
So would you look at her bio, those roots, Oklahoma City, the scholarship, the degree in speech audiology, then ultimately ending up at Harvard for a long career as a law professor and an expert on bankruptcy. If you look at that bio as a totality, Diane, how does it, you know, how does it compare with what we know of the candidates who end up in the upper tier? Is there any commonality? I guess I'm asking you about that.
Well, I think in her case, and without kind of delving into other candidates at this point in time, I think she truly does come from those humble beginnings that was already talked about in the 2016 cycle. You know, as you will remember, there was a lot of enthusiasm, including in the state of Iowa, for her to be the progressive candidate and not Bernie Sanders. And so, I do think that, and I'm going to say it this way, too. I'm going to frame it a little bit as much as gender as well.
Okay.
I think she comes from not only those background and sort of humble beginnings, but I think also when you look at women candidates in general, they are kind of driven by, I think, the helping professions. And so, you know, even though she ended up in the law, and so did other, you know, candidates that are being talked about, like Amy Klobuchar and Kamala Harris, you know, she did so sort of by coming up, you know, she worked with Children for Disabilities for a while. So I think a lot of women candidates, not only for president in recent years, but also certainly for Congress, has kind of start out in these helping professions, and then whatever they become later, you know, they do have that background in social services, I think, that typically, I think, again, you know, frames part of their narrative.
That's an interesting point. Diane Bystrom is with us if you've just tuned in to the show. She's Director Emerita of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State. And she's our first guest for our brand new segment that is called What Does That Democrat Bring to the Party? An acknowledgement that we're going to get announcements from Democratic would-be presidential hopefuls between now and, I don't know, end of February, early March. Often we're going to hear from as many, maybe between 15 and 20 Democratic candidates that want to get into the race. I don't want to talk so much about the horse race. You're going to find that kind of news coverage in a lot of other places. I want to try to understand how each candidate's biography, their talents, their skills, their interests, their legislative work informs the way voters will perceive them, and informs the arguments that these candidates will be making as they seek the nomination. So today we're talking about Elizabeth Warren because she spent the weekend in Iowa and she's headed back there, and it is clear that she's running for president. So Diane is checking her out with me, and we're talking about some of the unique qualities that Elizabeth Warren brings to the race. Diane, I think one of the formative Washington experiences for Elizabeth Warren seems to be that appointment in 2010 by President Obama to head up the new Consumer Protection Bureau. And I wanted to play a little cut here in an interview with John King on CNN, where she's answering the question about why bankers should or should not fear her. Here's what she said.
There are bankers, sure, who don't like me. Some of them haven't met me. Some of them have seen enough. But the reality is, it depends on where the problems are. There's some bankers who like me. People who want to put out good, simple products that folks can understand, and understand the price, understand what the risks are, exercise their own personal responsibility about whether or not they want to do it. Those are bankers, I think, who are going to welcome this consumer agency because they're actually going to have a better shot in a competitive marketplace.
Tell me what you hear in that, Diana, and the way she described what the work is and how it's going to be seen by the financial industry.
Well, I think, again, you know, you have to go back into her bio a little bit as well. And one of the things that I was looking into before we talked today is that she actually considered herself a Republican until about 1995.
Jeez, because, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm reading in the encyclopedia that I just published. But anyway, she considered herself a Republican because she believed they were best able to handle the economy. And then she switched political parties in 1995 when she, you know, no longer believed that. And so it was sort of at that point in her career, I think, that she decided to use her scholarly expertise in the areas of consumer protection, bankruptcy, to go into the public policy arena. So, you know, before she was nominated by President Obama in 2011 for that Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which, by the way, she was not confirmed because of some of the concerns about her with the banking industry. You know, she sort of, before that, she launched on this sort of public policy and academic research career in that area. And so I do think when you look at her, she really tries to have a message of economic fairness. And that message can, I think, relate to some people in the banking industry. I think she's trying to portray herself as not opposed to banking, certainly, because that's part of the whole milieu of financial services in this country. But I think she did try, in trying to win that appointment and trying to dissuade some concerns that some conservatives had about her in the bureau.
You know, the other thing that I heard there was, and I think this is an important skill that she possesses, she talks about economics and economic inequality in a way that's very accessible. I know there are lots of politicians who are committed to, you know, policies around there and resolving some of that. But Elizabeth Warren seems to have a gift for knowing how to talk about it in a way that it makes sense to the rest of us.
Well, I think, and again, I think that is a combination of her own personal experiences growing up, and not just growing up, but the fact that, you know, she, you know, started college, she quit college, she finished school, then she went to law school at Rutgers. And so I think part of it is just how she's brought herself up and then, you know, honed her interest in economic inequality and the economy into her academic career, and I think that's come out. You know, one of the things I noticed, and I look back at some of the speeches that she gave in Iowa this past week, as well as some of the Q&A that she got, you know, one of the things I think that she's done, at least one of the things she's done this cycle that's come out, I think, in her appearance in Iowa, is that she's using sort of this broad theme of the economy and inequality with nearly all the issues that she talks about, including like climate change, student loans, student debt. I mean, everything is sort of weaved together in this larger narrative about relating to the economy and economic inequality.
Diana, I think I need a copy of your new book. I hear, what, are there two volumes to it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just published with Barbara Burrell, who's also retired. I actually, this was the last thing I did before I retired, but it's a new book on women in the American political system, and it's two volumes. And I did not write the entry that we have on Liz Warren, another contributor did, but read it this morning before I talked to you.
Well, congratulations on the publication. It is called Women in the American Political System, an encyclopedia of women as voters, candidates, and office holders. It will become my election season Bible, Diane. Thank you.
Well, good. Yeah, we're hoping that people can use it going into 2020.
Thank you so much. Really good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, Carrie.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. You can add your voice to the discussion by calling in at 800-242-2828 or tweeting us at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks!